transport travelers, bringing art and the unexpected from around the world to you. Today, we're peeking inside Bangkok's galleries and kitchens, and especially its street food stalls. We'll explore how the art and food have evolved in this fast-changing city and where it's headed next. Hello, and this is Elizabeth. I've got a guest today on the Art for Travelers podcast.
So I am Chow. I go by the name of Bangkok Glutton on Twitter, and I write a lot about food.
And you also have a website?
Yes, I do, and it's called bangkokglutton.com, and I wrote a street food book recently called Bangkok's Top 50 Street Food Stalls. It's my favorite street food places. These are the ones that I'm the most enthusiastic about.
So we could say that you are a street food aficionado.
Well, you know, everybody is, I think. If you live in Bangkok, you have to be, because you would be left out of like 50% of the cocktail party conversation if you weren't. You have to know what's the great place down the corner from you, or you have to know where to get a good fried chicken, because this is what, you know, people are really interested in Bangkok. This is what people really like to talk about. And it's the one thing that unifies people, which is why I like to talk about food, because it's the one thing that people are really happy to share and happy to talk about and say, oh, you've never heard of this place. Oh, my goodness. You have to go, you know, and you discover something new. And it's always fun. It's not like it's not a snobby or exclusive kind of thing. And I like that about it.
Would you say that kind of reflects some of Bangkok's spirit as a city, as a metropolis?
Absolutely.
A truly global city.
Bangkok has skyscrapers and the SkyTrain and is very cosmopolitan. But it also, I think at its heart, it's based on the ground. Everything is on the sidewalk. You shop on the sidewalk. You buy your produce on the sidewalk. You eat on the sidewalk. Why not? Because it's right there, and it's immediately accessible. And Bangkok people don't like to wait.
So you say that Bangkok people, they like to get their food and the takeaway and just get on with their lives?
They want what they want when they want it. I admire that.
Would you say that street food is one of Bangkok's art forms?
Yes.
In a sense?
Absolutely. I think Bangkok has one of the best street food scenes in the world. Bangkok is up there, for sure.
In my experience, it's got the most variety of anywhere I've been in terms of street food options, because you have so much amazing dessert stalls, you have incredible vegetarian stalls, you have noodles of all different sorts, and then people who can make almost anything you can imagine. But you wouldn't guess it, because all you see is a few vegetables scattered in the glass window.
Yes.
And you have to know what you're looking for. So it's almost like a coded language, and I think that your book kind of helps people explore that.
Yeah. Thank you, because I like to think that too. I mean, it took a lot of eating and stuffing my face to do that, to decode the language, but it was intimidating to me at first. That's the reason why I embarked on it. And I see that in other places. Like, I think there's nothing more intimidating than a Japanese noodle shop. And I would love to decode that. Or, you know, walking down a side street of Hanoi and just staring and wondering, what exactly is on offer here? How am I going to get it? It's frustrating, because you want to be able to eat everything you see. That's how you explore. That's how I explore. And then to find that there are obstacles in your way is very frustrating.
So I think one of the things that is most interesting about Bangkok's history and where the culture of today comes from is I find that Thailand as a culture, and particularly Bangkok, very cosmopolitan, and that it has very much its own spirit, but it's also very open to foreign influences, but it takes aspects of other cultures that it comes in contact with.
Yes.
And really, you know, makes it its own. You see this in its art, where starting in the early 20th century, you had the man who later founded Silpukhon University, an Italian sculptor who was invited here by the king and ended up really revolutionizing Thai art. Yet Thai art kept its integrity, but modernized much more so than anywhere else in the region. What would you say, is there something parallel that happened with Thai food over the last few centuries?
Oh, for sure. I mean, I think that the contribution of the Chinese is the biggest. I mean, without the Chinese, we'd still be eating rice with a bunch of crushed peppercorns. They introduced fish sauce. They introduced shrimp paste. They introduced frying, duck. I mean, so many things wouldn't be possible without the Chinese having come. And I think that when people talk about foreign influences in Thai cuisine today, I think maybe they're forgetting that Thai food has always been a sort of fusion, and it continues to be. a reflection of the changing country that we are. And the different influences that affect Thailand.
Because the country has, you have borders with China, with Burma, or also known as Myanmar, with Laos, Cambodia, and also Malaysia. And so also there are regional cuisines as well, right, in Thailand that are quite distinctive.
Yes.
Can you find all of these different cuisines in Bangkok?
Almost. There's great southern food. There's a huge southern community in Bangkok. And it's very popular. Southern food is hugely popular. And why wouldn't it be?
What distinguishes southern food from...
Chilies.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's spicy. It's spicy and there's a lot of seafood, gangtai bak, kind of stuff like that. But pat sotaw, stuff that is that uses the ingredients from the area. But the unifying thing about them is that they're totally spicy. Too spicy for me sometimes.
How about other cuisines, regional cuisines from Thailand that are pretty common to find in Bangkok? For example, in my neighborhood, there's a lot of northeastern food, but I think that's just maybe where we live. How about elsewhere in Bangkok?
I think Isan food. Also, Petbury Road is a hub for Isan food.
And that's northeastern food.
Yeah, very popular. I mean, why wouldn't it be popular? It's delicious. Even outside of the country, Isan food is popular.
And speaking of chilies, I mean, they're super fiery. Yeah?
Exactly. Mm. And the uncompromising, really straightforward flavors of tart and fire and salt, it really resonates with people. I mean, there's a Isan restaurant that just opened in New York, purely Isan food, and I think, whoa, you know, that's great. You know, a place that doesn't, you know, have pad thai or green curry. It's Isan food.
How about, you had mentioned earlier, there was a Portuguese, Japanese woman who was with the royal court who helped to introduce aspects of Portuguese cuisine to Thailand.
Yes.
A while back. Can you tell us more about her?
She was a huge influence on Thai cuisine. I mean, next to the Chinese, I think that she would be the second biggest influence. Her Thai name was Tao Tong Gip Ma, and it was kind of a way of saying her original name, which is Maria Gayomar de Pinha. She was basically a slave to the Thai kitchen, but she created some incredible dishes that people still eat today.
For example?
Like hamok, you know, the steamed fish curry or the seafood curry, which everybody loves. That's one of my favorite dishes. It's delicious. The custard in the pumpkin.
It's the most decadent treat.
Yes. So she basically used European techniques with Thai ingredients and created something completely new. And it's fusion. So when people rail against fusion now, I mean, I think, again, this thing about authenticity, it seems to be an attempt to draw the people who so-called know from the people who don't know.
A bit exclusive.
Yeah.
Because as somebody who is coming to Thai culture as an outsider, I do find it has a lot of different elements to it. I see aspects of, you know, the Japanese time here and some aspects of the Portuguese with the chilies. But the Thai culture has combined it into its own thing, which is unique from anywhere else. And I think that's creativity in any culture.
Yeah.
Is the willingness to change and expand. And you see that with artists as well. Any creatives, they take elements and they make it their own. And I see that a lot in Thai culture, especially the food, which is now appreciated worldwide.
Yeah. I mean, you see, like, I mean, what I'm seeing right now is a growing Japanese influence. Do you notice that? I mean, I notice that on the street all the time. You know, sushi on the street, you know, tempura fried vegetables and things. I think that that's very interesting, that the street food continues to evolve into things that people want. Japanese food used to be considered a luxury. And then Fuji, that chain Fuji came and kind of made it available to the masses, and now it's on the street. You never used to see sushi on the street, honestly. I think that is an interesting change.
I think there's a real appreciation here for Japanese precision of culture. There are also a lot of Japanese multinationals based here, so that has helped to change the culture of street food.
Everybody enjoys street food, no matter who you are. Everybody has a favorite street food place, and everybody has an opinion about their street food place. Street food is everywhere. Street food and the quality is very high. For a food-loving person, it would be ridiculous to ignore. It's a big part of the Thai dining scene, for sure. I mean, I don't understand people who say they don't eat street food. And, you know, some people, they just don't want to go through all the discomfort of sitting outside. I think that there's no better way of getting to know a Thai city than by eating its street food. So I feel like you're missing out on a lot if you don't try it at least once.
One of the things that really struck me about your book was that you mentioned, for example, you can come from Isan, and if you have a really popular food stall, you can make a fortune that's not imaginable back home.
I think street food, the industry, represents a kind of Thai dream for people and rise up from very humble beginnings and become a gazillionaire. Kuncharan, the owner of Beer Chang, I mean, everybody says this is part of his personal myth. His father was a hoi tot vendor, an oyster omelet vendor in Chinatown. And in just one generation, the family becomes one of the three richest in the country. It's a phenomenal leap, and possible by wonderful oyster omelets.
Which I have to say, yeah, hoi tot is one of my favorite kind of street foods. My husband loves them because it's a quick, greasy, eggy fix. You know, it's honestly not that far from Western food, really, a hoi tot, but it's done with, I think, a lot more precision than your average omelet back in the States or in the UK.
Yes, and there are different, okay, I'm going to bore people now, but there are different ways of having them too. So there's the thin and crispy, which I've been told is the girly way of eating hoi tot. And then there's the very thick, juicy, soft Osuan, which is apparently very macho and
like the
masculine.
Manwich version of
yeah, because somebody denigrated my favorite hoi tot stall as being girly once, and I thought that was very interesting. That was a very interesting perspective. I'd never thought of food in those gendered terms, but why not? I mean, Japan has very gendered food. Ramen is very masculine. Tofu is very female, apparently.
French food
as well. Yes.
French food is considered female?
Yeah.
So I think that street food can be really one way that tourists or visitors to Thailand can really dip into the culture just by going to a street food stall and muddling their way through, maybe hopefully with your book in hand.
Yes.
You know, or even on their own. I mean, I do find the Thai street food vendors, unless they're really, really stressed out and have a huge line,
yeah,
are generally really gracious and very willing to...
Generally.
Yeah. Most of the time, they're very willing to deal with somebody who's totally incompetent in the language. One thing that interests me about the street food and also the art is in so many ways made accessible to people. So, for example, you've got the Bangkok Art and Culture Center, which is in the middle of a big shopping district. People are just going about their business. If they want, they can just a 20-minute stroll around the Guggenheim-like stairways there, and they can see what's going on. Exhibitions from Chiang Mai. They can have a coffee or some crazy ice cream at Icedia Cafe. Or, you know, it's a really interesting blend to me of local culture and local food. It's not designed for foreign tourists. It's designed for, you know, the Thais who live in Bangkok. And anybody can come in. That really strikes me as just one of the wonderful things about Bangkok, that they're making that more and more accessible to people.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting, the concept behind it. Because you expect a museum. Expect something that's curated and very, for some people, inaccessible or highbrow. It's actually designed as a forum to exchange ideas. So it's a place for artists to meet and brainstorm with each other. And I think that's really interesting. And it says a lot about Bangkok, actually. It's inherently sharing, community-based nature. Mm-hmm. And I think street food is similar.
What do you think about some of the other spaces in Bangkok that combine art and food together? For example, WTF Cafe Gallery of Bangkok.
Love.
So they have a combination of really kind of edgy artwork that's selected by curators in Bangkok. So it's not just, oh, here's an artist, we'll put their artwork up in our cafe. It's no, we have seriously awesome art and fantastic cocktails. And what do you think of their food?
Great. I mean, I love WTF. I try to go as often as I can when I'm not asleep by 10. But I love WTF, and I love what they're doing. And I wish there were more places like that. But there will be. I think WTF is just a kind of harbinger of the future.
I think so too. I think they're a great model. And Y Gallery that just opened up, they're above a bar, is it Ban Bar?
Mm-hmm.
That's we haven't been there yet, but I definitely want to go because the art they've chosen is fantastic and I'm sure it's worth a visit to go to both places.
Yeah. What I found interesting about that place, was they didn't really want to call it art. They wanted to call it something that was less exclusive. And I think that there's this real consideration of making things less snobby that you don't find in many art scenes.
Around the world.
Yeah.
I think for a lot of people, whether they realize it or not, there are definitely barriers to entry. Whether it's the audience's own barrier in terms of what they think that they'll be comfortable in, or the organizer's barriers in terms of what they're thinking of as the audience. Another place that I do like for art in Bangkok that combines art and food is Eat Me Restaurant, which is run, it's a high quality exhibition. I mean, on their website, first thing you see is the art they're showing. Their food is good, but the first thing you see is the art, and I really like that priority. Speaking of non-pretension, Recreate, who, you know, you talked about an exhibition that you've seen of his. Can you tell a little more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I went on the opening day at the Thon Thon Gallery, and there was a line out the door, and you don't see that. I mean, you know, Thai people love art, but they love food more, and here, you know, people standing in line waiting for green, red, or yellow curry. I mean, people were just like, they couldn't wait. They were just so thrilled to be a part of this exhibit and to taste all the curries. And at first I was like, what is he doing? I don't get it at all. He's cooking, and then there's pictures of, you know, these horrific scenes from Thai political struggles around. And I thought, okay, I don't get it. And then somebody had to explain to me that they were turning politics into food. Politics, like the color, the political colors, green, yellow, red, they were turning into the most basic human need. And the people were bonding over it and comparing their like for the green or the red curry. Or saying, oh, I'm eating art right now. People were really excited, because it was art that they could really get.
And he just did a similar thing in Art Basel. So he was combining scenes from actually all over the world, but with more of a kind of a Middle Eastern thrust, musaman curry. So it is still Thai, but more of an Arabic flavor to it.
Right.
So you had this very well-executed art pole or different drawings behind, and then you had these boiling pots in front, and it looked a little bit awkward. How was it when you saw it at the gallery here in Bangkok?
It was hot. I mean,
did it taste good?
It did. I have to say, my favorite was also the green curry.
Why was that your favorite?
A lot of people liked the green curry, and so did I. It was the most delicious. Politically, I have no opinion, but the green curry was the most delicious. He made the best green curry. I know he did something with pad thai a few years ago, right? And I thought that was interesting too, because pad thai is what people think of when they think of Thailand or Thai people.
What so, foreigners do, yeah.
Yeah. So to just boil it all down to pad thai and making pad thai for people, I thought that was kind of interesting.
Which is one of the least exciting Thai dishes available in Bangkok anyway.
It's not my favorite Thai dish, but a lot of people love it. And I think that in essence, pad thai is a beautiful dish because it combines a very Chinese base with very Thai seasonings. And it kind of embodies what Thailand is as a fusion.
It's the ultimate fusion dish.
Yes.
We'll talk about how Bangkok food, Thai food is changing as Thailand. I hate to use the word modernizes or westernizes because Thailand is not westernizing. It's changing. Bangkok's changing certainly faster than anywhere else in the country. But would you say that the Bangkok food scene or the Bangkok food on the street and in the restaurants, would you say it's westernizing? Would you say it's changing? And how is that?
Some people would say it's westernizing, but I just think that it's reflecting normal globalization. People rail against Greyhound and the like, and when people take liberties with traditional recipes. I mean, if the ingredients are there, why wouldn't you use them? It doesn't make any sense. I mean, I don't think that 100 years ago people were like, oh, I want to keep everything the same and let's not change it because it's not authentic otherwise. I mean, nobody thinks this. If it tastes good and if it works and people like it, why not go for it? But I just don't think that so-called authenticity is paramount.
So what do you see as the future of Thai food? How is it changing in terms of how people eat on the street, in homes, in restaurants?
It's changing. I mean, we can bemoan this, but we would just be one of those authenticity trolls. I mean, it happens. It happens that there is change. It happens that people cook in shopping malls because it's air-conditioned and convenient and useful. So there's less smoke, you know, as Jarrett Risley wrote. And it happens that people use more granulated sugar than palm sugar because it's easier. And the taste changes as a result.
It's a very simple kind of high note from granulated
exactly.
sugar. You don't get that. It's like instead of using molasses, then you use white sugar. It's
exactly.
such a different taste.
Yeah. It changes the taste of the food. But it saves that much time for the cook. White vinegar instead of lime. That happens, you know? And it's completely synthetic. It's a different flavor. But it's an easier way to control the taste. As opposed to lime where, you know, it depends on the lime or the season.
And the acidity could be quite different, right?
Yeah, it varies from lime to lime.
Right.
You can never control it. That's why, you know, it's hard to make a Thai food recipe. I'm trying to do a Thai cookbook, actually, with my husband's family, using the family recipes, and it's very hard because the recipes were handed down verbally for generations, and then somebody, you know, tried to write them down, and then the quantities and the ingredients have changed. And it doesn't translate in today's world anymore. So to do a kind of adaptation of it is very difficult.
Is that also a question of people's priorities and their labor going to different places? I mean, for example, in Bangkok, it's pretty hard to have a one-income family.
Yeah.
You know, just like in the States.
Yeah. I mean, that's why street food has blossomed. It's because there's nobody at home, like, you know, at the mortar and pestle pounding the namprig. You have to buy your food. And that's, I think, one of the biggest factors for the explosion in the street food industry here.
I find in the art world as well that successful artists are pressured to make more work in shorter periods of time. They have to present it regularly in shows. The administration aspect of it is quite intense. And a lot of successful artists here in Thailand tend to have students, for example, the artist who did the White Temple near Chiang Rai, he's able to achieve much more than he could just on his own.
Yeah, there's a collaborative aspect to art in Thailand.
It can be hard to kind of meet that demand with what the modern world expects with such a fast pace and how people try to adapt to that.
Yes, agreed. And food, similar. You don't see a lot of Thai food at the very high level. There's only a few places that offer it. But there are, you know, the street food places. You can find them on every street. Yeah, the fast pace demands a fast response. And that's what street food is equipped for.
One thing you mentioned in your book is that the best street stalls in Bangkok tend to congregate together.
Yeah.
Almost by our Darwinian thing.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Yeah.
One street stall will draw the people. They'll look next door and be like, oh, okay, that place looks good too. On the reverse, on the flip side of the coin, if your place isn't so good and you're next to a nice place, a good place, a popular place, then they'll be like, oh, you know, that place is my eye. That's okay.
So how would you say Thai consumption habits are changing? Do you think there's more sugar in the diet or other things processed?
Unquestionably, more sugar. And I think the flavor profile of Thai food is it's not changing. Somebody will strangle me for saying that. It's not changing, but more Thais are moving away from the traditional flavor profile, which is fish sauce and lime and palm sugar and a bitter element like the baby eggplants. And moving more towards a very sweet, synthetic sourness, acidity, and less fishy soy sauce and salt. And I find that really interesting that there are a growing number of Thais who find fish sauce too fishy. I mean, it's a pillar. It's a pillar of Thai cuisine. It's everywhere, even in the north. And to have people say that prefer light soy sauce and salt, I mean, it blows the mind. For me, it just shows that how things are changing and tastes are changing and how Thai food is adapting. And there's a growing spectrum of tastes. I don't think that anyone should say that this is a Thai taste anymore.
I find in the Thai art scene is they're expanding a lot in terms of the art forms that it encompasses. There's more performance art, there's more experimental art. For years, a lot of artists in Bangkok have come from the Chiang Mai area, from the north, the northwest. It seems to be a very fertile ground for artists. But they come here and they settle here, and that's, in some ways, may have felt compelled to leave their roots behind. But it's almost as though there's been a bit of a northern renaissance where some of the artists coming down from the north, they're grabbing hold of those roots and keeping them in their work as well. Do you see that with the cuisine in Bangkok? That it's still proudly regional, or do you see it becoming more homogenous?
You know, I am finding it harder to find pure regional expressions of the food. That's a really pretentious way of saying it. Isan food, I think, fine. It's fine. It's a popular cuisine. Everybody knows it.
The northeastern food, near Lao, it's very distinctive.
Very distinctive and hugely popular. And I think it's a great, great cuisine. But, for example, northern food, I feel like fewer and fewer people know what it is.
That's your pet food, isn't it?
I know it is.
I don't know pet food. That's your favorite food.
I know
food.
It is. No, I think pet food is a good term because it's dear to my heart, and I talk about it all the time, and people get bored. But it's special to me. I'm from the north, and I think it's a great food. I'm biased, obviously, but I think it's a great cuisine that is underappreciated because it doesn't fit all the it doesn't check all the points that Thai food usually checks. It's not that spicy. It's fatty, and it's about veggies. A lot of veggies and pork and feeling full.
Which you need in those kind of climates
in
the north.
Yes, and you know, I'm a big fan of feeling full. So, it's hugely underappreciated, especially in Bangkok. There are no real good outlets for it, I'm sorry to say. Except for one. It's called Man Mueang on Rangkumhaeng, and it's very good. But it is far away. There's another thing about northern food. Chiang Mai is a nice food town, but actually it's the blandest of all the northern cities.
It's very banana pancake centric, especially the center.
Yeah. Northern people actually don't go to Chiang Mai for the food. If you see a non-style restaurant, if it advertises itself as non-style, run there.
Naan is great. It's right near Lao. I've spent a couple of days there looking for paper. It's a wonderful town. You should go there if you can anyway.
Yes, and it's the number one place for northern Thai food. It's the authority, uncontested for sure, among northerners. So anything Naan style or in Naan, just eat it. Eat it all.
Go get yourself to Naan anyway. Rent a bicycle. Spend a couple of nights. Cycle around near the river. Wrap it up with the best of Thai food, which is northern Thai food, and get yourself to Naan. And check out Chow's book, which is called, again?
Bangkok's Top 50 Street Food Stalls.
And her blog, bangkokglutton.com, where you can stay in touch with Thai food today. Thanks again, Chow. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Art for Travelers with Elizabeth, recorded in Bangkok at Ebriel Art Studio. Find links, photos, and more online at artfortravelers.com. Connect with me on Twitter at Ebriel or on my website, ebriel.com. And we'll see you for the next edition of Art for Travelers.